Welcome into Footnotes. Kevin Foote on 103.7 The Game. Phone number 706-0111, 706-0111. We had lots of interviews yesterday. Today we only have one on the schedule. We'll be talking Astros again. Get another opportunity to talk to Chandler Rome about the Astros of the Houston Chronicle. And speaking of the Astros, that will be at the bottom of the second hour. But speaking of the Astros, what a glorious night last night. It was a night where it was frustration throughout. Astros scored 14 runs Sunday, which is never a good idea. It's never a good idea to score 14 runs unless it's like game 7 of the World Series. That's the only time, unless you're just really bad and you need some fun. If you're a good team, the only time it's ever good to score 14 runs is game 7 of the World Series to ensure a win. And then who cares if you got the whole offseason ahead of you. So tomorrow does not matter. But it's never good to score 14 runs. And so did I expect to have the kind of offensive performance that the Astros had last night? Of course I did. With two outs and two strikes and the bases empty in the ninth inning, they had one run. Of course, you always want to score more runs, but I understood it. I understood that. What was frustrating to me was how the Rangers got their second run with more walks, and we'll get to that later. But, stole a victory last night. But in the end, it turned out glorious because they stole a victory from the Rangers, and the Rangers stole two wins from the Astros earlier this year. So it felt good to get back. It just felt good to win an extra inning game. The Astros hadn't won that many extra inning games the last 2 years. They were terrible in extra innings last year. They started out this year, they were 2-0, so I'm like, well, it might change. And then they lost four straight until last night when they came from behind. Carlos Correa hits a game-tying home run with two strikes. I think it was a 2-2 count, but I know he had two strikes on him. And two outs, bottom of the ninth, nobody on base. He goes opposite field and ties the game. They get a few breaks on calls, and I'm going to get to the umpire a little bit later. Man, was he terrible. I mean, just brutal umpire. And I'll get on him a little bit later. But and then Altuve, who had a terrible game, comes back with a grand slam to win the game, walk-off grand slam, and the Astros win. And when it looked like they were going to lose a frustrating game to the Rangers. So it's important for a lot of reasons. One, as I said yesterday, and I started talking about this last week, the Astros have got to learn to start beating up on bad teams. Like, they've played very well almost all season against good teams. Teams, when I say good teams, I'm talking about teams with winning records, teams well above 500. I hear all these guys, oh, how in the world can you get, I heard it again this morning, how in the world do you get this guy out from the Red Sox, or how in the world do you get this guy out for the Blue Jays? Well, the Astros got him out a lot. Like, how in the world do you get Shohei Ohtani out? Well, in the last series, Astros got him out just about every time he stepped to the plate. It can be done. I saw it with my own eyes. All this individual hyperbole junk drives me bonkers sometimes. But anyway, Rafael Devers is on fire right now. Rafael Devers didn't do very much against the Astros in 7 games. So he can get him out. I saw it happen. But the Astros they've done a great job against teams that are well above 500. They have done an awful job against the bad teams this year. And they've got to start beating bad teams. They just have to. It's not going to happen the way it looks like it's going to happen until they start beating bad teams. And again, the Oakland A's just continue to beat teams who either have mediocre to bad records. They just dominate them. They did it again last night. They win every night. Now, they can't keep playing bad teams all year long. The Astros, after this weekend, are going to start playing teams with some bad records. And the A's eventually have to play some good teams, and hopefully they start losing some games when they start playing those good teams. But wow, great victory last night. One of the things that we talked about was what in the world are they going to do with Odorizzi and all these starting pitchers? Well, in my mind, Lance McCullers is the seventh best starting pitcher on this team. I'm just not – well, I was going to say I'm not a Lance McCullers guy. I actually like Lance McCullers. He's easy to like because he's a combination. He seems to have a lot of loyalty, and yet he's very outspoken. He seems to have a lot of personality. Seems to be like a guy who's is a great teammate. You know, there's a lot to like about Lance McCullers. They drafted him. He worked out. I mean, a lot of the high draft picks at times for organizations don't work out. I've always thought he would be should be a closer or a relief pitcher. He seems to go on these stretches. Like, it's nothing for him to have out of the blue, he'll have a 10-pitch stretch where he throws like 9 or 10 balls way out of the zone. Not even close. He's very frustrating to me. On my trust list, out of the 7 starting pitchers the Astros have, I would put Lance McCullers 7th. And I'm sure there are a lot of people that are going to disagree. I'll ask Chandler Rome about him and see what Chandler thinks. But I just do not trust Lance McCullers. Don't trust him. I like him. I love what he's done. He's had a nice career. I hope he proves me totally wrong. I've seen him at times be really great on short stretches, and then normally he gets hurt. I don't like that part of it, but he just came off the DL, so I want to give him somewhat of a break, but I just don't trust him. I just don't trust him, and I hope he earns that trust. I don't trust the fact that his home and road splits are way too big of a difference. Don't like that at all. But anyway, bottom line last night is they stole a victory from the Rangers. It was great. Great feeling. I was about to go to bed all depressed, and it lasted late, and I don't know if I woke anybody up, but when Correa hit the homer, it was great fun. So what a night to be at Minute Maid Park. They stole a victory. It was Dollar Dog Night. We were just joking about that off the air. I have never been to a Dollar Dog Night. I need to do that one day because I might hurt myself, but I would enjoy partaking in a good Dollar Dog Night at Minute Maid Park, especially if the Astros got the victory. Got to get the victory. Like, all that dollar dog will just turn into heartburn if the Astros lose. Heartache, heartburns, all the same thing. But if they win and you eat about 6 or 7 dogs, you know, dollar dogs, and the Astros get a victory, what a great night that would be. Speaking of meals, the home plate umpire last night, Jerry Meals. Jerry Mills, like, you know, Jerry Mills has been an umpire for like 20-something years. He was horrendous last night. Now, you know, it makes it worse when his strike call is terrible. Like, he puts no effort into it. Now, he just looks like one of these guys who's going through, doesn't mean he's going through the motions. We used to talk a lot about this. There are certain athletes who have a kind of a lackadaisical approach to how their body movements, or, you know, years ago we used to have an athlete who smiled a lot, and we and Saints fans did not like that at all. I get it. I don't like when athletes hug and kiss after the game. We just played for 3 hours, fight scratching and clawing. My team loses, and my guys are hugging and kissing with the opponent 10 seconds after the game. I have never understood that, ever. And I think I'm going to die having never understood that. But so I don't need – so I understand that it can be very deceiving. But this guy, he just kind of barely throws up his arm. Doesn't even look like he does it. His strike call is lame. Look, I don't need you to be Dutch Rennard. Any of y'all who aren't my age or a little older and don't know who Dutch Rennard is, look up, Google Dutch Rennard, R-E-N-N-E-R-T, I think his name was spelled. Dutch Rennard. He was an umpire when I was a lot younger, 70s and 80s, and he had a dramatic strike call. I don't need this cat to be Dutch Rennard, but if you're going to have the lamest strike call and look like you're just bored to be out there, then you need to do a better job than Jerry Mills did last night. He was awful. Awful. And once again, performances like Jerry Mills had last night, and, you know, he was bad for both teams. Now, if I'm a Ranger fan, I'd be incensed because he made some very questionable calls in the ninth and tenth inning last night that were in the tenth inning that helped the Astros, to be honest. Now, most of the night I was furious with him because he kept giving these strike calls that weren't strikes. They weren't strikes. Now, he was doing it both ways, but, man, this guy was bad last night. And then he would give you the pitch below the knees, and then he wouldn't give you the pitch below the knee. He was awful. But anyway, it's just another more evidence for the people who want the mechanical strike zone. They keep making it tougher and tougher. All right, before we get to our first break, let's go to the phone lines. Hello.
Hey Kevin, good morning, buddy. How you doing?
Good morning. How are you?
I'm older than you, and I was once told doing some refereeing in college, umpiring, refereeing. When you've made your decision, make your call that nobody has to keep staring at you. Make the call and move on. And I like a good demonstrative call. Okay, one way or the other, make a good demonstrative call. Stand behind it. Number two, great victory last night, like you said. Okay. Great victory. And to top that off, my Yankees won also. Number three, Kevin, Dollar Dog Night is a bucket list item you've got to go to.
Oh, yeah.
It brings a little boy out of you, okay? The hot dog, the mustard, the relish, it's people walk out of there with 4 and 5 at a time. I saw one guy leave with 10.
I
followed him to see where he was sitting. He sat down and gobbled him up right there. But you got to make it. I've done it. And we got a group of us that go up there. Every year we make a businessman special. We catch the evening game at 7, 7:30, and the noon game the following day. But we go along a Tuesday, Wednesday, so we can do Dollar Dog Night.
Oh, that's a great
idea. We're going in August to see the Royals. I wasn't too crazy about that, but we'll go see the Royals, you know? And number four, you think Carlos Correa's worth is increasing? And what's your gut feeling on him re-signing with the Astros? And I'm going to listen to you on that and keep up the good work.
All right, I appreciate the call very much. Thank you, sir. I try not to think a lot about Carlos Correa. I think Correa's first month, he wasn't doing very well. But in the last 6 weeks or so, he's getting on base at a higher rate. He's walked a lot more. He just is not afraid of the moment. That's the best thing about Carlos Correa. He's not afraid of the big moment. And so far this year, he's not quite as good defensively as he was last year. He was unbelievable defensively in that shortened season last year. As far as my gut feeling, I'm very optimistic just because I'm a glass half full guy. And I just think he's going to end up resigning because I think he really likes it in Houston. I think if he stays healthy and keeps putting up good numbers, he's not having a great year. He's just having a good, steady year. I think they're going to see that it's worth it. So I'm feeling optimistic about it, and we'll just see what happens. I mean, really, It's still a long way to go, but to answer your question, I feel good about it. We'll ask Chandler that question next hour as well. Let's take a commercial break. We'll come back, change the subject a little bit. 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to Footnotes. That was a good one. And that's true. I mean, I'm telling you, Aaron Rodgers, that guy is just something. Look, I don't like Tom Brady. I don't really dislike Tom Brady. I hate the fact that no one, the national narrative, the way they treat Tom Brady, it's really other people, what they say and how they interpret Tom Brady that I hate. Tom Brady in and of himself, like he always says the right thing. He doesn't, for all the titles he has and what everyone says about him, I'm sure he's really cocky in his personal life. But when he gets in front of the camera, he says the right things. He does the right things. I got no issue with how he handles himself. None. Aaron Rodgers is just like, why do you exist? I mean, that's basically what he did. Like, who are you to ask me a question? Now, apparently he likes Kenny Mayne. Good. I mean, I'm good that glad he likes Kenny Mayne. But no. That was a good one. I like that one. All right. We were talking about the Astros. Before we get to change subject a little bit, a few other things that have happened since we last spoke. I want to remind you about a great Astro weekend getaway. The Yankees. 4 tickets Saturday, July the 10th, as well as a $200 Visa gift card. That's what you could win if you go to the club, go to the website, 1037thegame.com, sign up for the clubhouse rewards, and you might win that great prize brought to you by Butcher Air Conditioning and JJ Exterminating and 1037 The Game Acadiana Sports Station. Again, July the 10th, Saturday, 4 tickets to the Yankee game and a $200 Visa gift card. Sign up today. You might win. All right. Lots of big news that's happened since we last spoke. We talked a little bit about the NBA, and we've had the big game last night. A lot of people said Kevin Durant's going to have to score 40-something points and carry him to win. So what did he do? He scored 40-something points, you know, had an unbelievable performance, arguably the best playoff performance of all time. Like, you could argue that. And I'm not a Kevin Durant guy. I think he's extremely talented. I guess I will always hold somewhat against him the what he did in going to Golden State. I thought, as I said, the worst, you know, non-morally awful thing, you know, worst legal thing that's ever happened in sports to me was him going to Golden State. I've never seen a move that was just so awful in every way. But you know, you can't take anything away. That was an incredible performance he had last night. And again, that's why you don't want to do that stuff. Like, earn it. And man, what an incredible performance he had last night. You know, so many of the stars in the 70s and 80s, and even in some into the 90s, like, you could have those kind of performances because stars had to do that kind of stuff. And man, what an incredible performance he had last night. Whether you love him or hate him, you can't deny what he did last night. Now, I still think the Bucks are going to win at home in Game 6. The question is, when they go back to Brooklyn, is he really going to be able to do that again? And or is, you know, Harden, you know, as people are going to say, was playing on one leg last night and was very ineffective. So can they pull that off again is the question. You know, if I'm them, you don't want to tank a game. But, man, how I think the big decision for Nash and the Nets is how much of a push do you put in Game 6? Because I think they're going to probably lose anyway. Now, look, if they go out win, then you just have to give them a standing ovation if they go win in Milwaukee in Game 6. I don't think that's going to happen. So how much physical and mental effort, if you're the Nets, do you put into this Game 6 in Milwaukee when you are in a physical, you know, you have serious injury issues? So that's going to be a big decision that they have to make. I don't want to use the word tank, but we've seen it before where you can tell that teams basically say, look, we're putting all our eggs in that Game 7 basket at home because we don't think we're going to win on the road in the Game 6. We've seen that before. And it's going to be interesting to see how the Nets handle that situation. The other big news is they had a press conference yesterday, and you know, some of us are old dogs, and we've had to learn a lot of new tricks. Well, someone like me who's, you know, been in Lafayette his whole life, have called Cajun Field his whole life. Like, Cajun Field came into existence. You know, I was alive when they played games at McNaspy, and I'm positive my parents took me there when I was like 2 or 3 years old. But, you know, since, you know, I was 5 years old when Cajun Field, they started playing football games at Cajun Field. So basically that's all I've ever known. And so for the next 15 years, at least, it was announced yesterday, it's going to be called Lord's Stadium. And so, you know, no one's going to say Cajun Field at Our Lady of Lord's Stadium. They're going to call it Lord's Stadium. And so, you know, we're just going to it's obviously a great financial thing. It's part of progress. And so I understand all of that. And we need to we're just going to have to get used to it. So congratulations to all involved. And hopefully it's a sign of better days and more people at, I was going to say Cajun Field, at Lord's Stadium in the future. All right, let's go to the phone lines. Hello.
Good morning, Mr. Foote.
Good morning, sir.
Now, Kevin, if you remember, I called you about a month ago when I told you to relax, take your blood pressure pills, and I'm glad to see you when you're in an excellent mood, Kevin, because I like you. You're a good guy. But I want to give somebody else some props, if you don't mind.
Okay.
The person that I would like to commend, Kevin, who called you, his name is Jay. I never met the guy before, but as far as I'm concerned, he complimented me. I'm going to just give it right back to him. He's the most, in my opinion, complete caller that calls you. He's objective, he's subjective. But, Kevin, sports is not a science. I mean, evidently there's some scientific improvements with people getting injured and what have you. But what I like about Jay, he just tells it like it is. He's unapologetic. And, Kevin, to be honest with you, you're the same way, and that's the reason why I like you. I like your show. I like your family, and I wish you nothing but success, Kevin. Have a great day.
I appreciate it. Thank you for calling, sir. Thank you very much. All right, let's get to another caller. Hello.
Footsie.
Howdy, sir.
Footsie, let me preface my Dollar Dog night by my life in the early 90s. I was living in Baton Rouge, and that's when they played a doubleheader on Saturday, 2-9 inning games. Well, at the old Alex Box, they had a they had the McDonald's light, and it's I'm not lying. I don't know if it was 92, 93, what year it was, but every time they put the McDonald's light on, Todd Walker, Russ Johnson, somebody hit a home run, and I mean, we were starving to death. We were living paycheck to paycheck. So me and here's the deal. I remember one weekend against Alabama, they put the McDonald's light on like in the second inning of the first game. They hit a home run. You had to wait all the way to the last, to after the last game, after the second game.
Yeah.
Me and my friends, we just had to tough it out. So anyway, some older friends of ours who understood, you know, we were living paycheck to paycheck and needed the help, we would go through the line and they would just give us a coupon. You know, we'd go through the line 2 or 3 times, but what we didn't do, so we'd have five quarter pounders, you know, for the whole week, but we didn't go to the same McDonald's at lunch. We go to one McDonald's and then we go to another McDonald's. We never went to the same McDonald's that week.
Right.
But, and I, after that promotion, the next year It was just they would draw a lucky number because they gave away so many three-quarter pounders. So in about they gave away a ton of quarter pounders. So in about 2006, this was like on 4th of July. It was Dollar Dog Day or whatever. It was a day game because I remember I went during the day. Them cats, footsie, I understood because I've been there. They were getting like 20 dogs, man, putting them in their coat pocket, putting them, in their pants pocket. Hey, I know those cats were eating on those dollar dogs for two or three days.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, I understood their dilemma, man. I mean, sometimes it's survival of the fittest, and those cats were trying to survive.
Exactly. Well, that'll make you decide who your favorite player is, the guy who hits you a home run to get you the free quarter pounders.
Oh, man, look, I ain't lying. Every time they turned on that McDonald's light, somebody hit a home run. It was great for the fans, but it wasn't too great for McDonald's, I can tell you that.
I know you didn't stay up last night, Bitter, but that was a great victory, stealing it from the Rangers last night.
Oh, yeah, no, I thought about you. I know how you feel about the Rangers, so I thought about you. Oh, no, but I check the scores every morning, and trust me, when I check that Astro score, I always think about you. But it was a good victory. Beating the Rangers is a good thing. But like you said, man, Oakland's playing good ball. I mean, those cats just keep playing good ball. I mean,
they win every night. Hey,
yeah, they do. They win all the time.
They win and every Astros, night.
The Astros are 2.5 games behind them, and they got 3 or 4 games in hand on the Astros right now.
Well, we'll see. Still a long way to go. I appreciate the call, sir.
All right, Footsie.
Take care. All right. No, it's funny because my youngest daughter, Riley, who's the second biggest Astro fan in our family, she doesn't like Jose Altuve, but she hates the Rangers. Like, she hates the Rangers more than I do, okay? She hates the Rangers, but she doesn't really like Jose Altuve. So I haven't had a chance to talk to her yet today. I texted her this morning and teased her. So I'm sure that was kind of an interesting turn of events last night for Jose Altuve. They hit a grand slam to beat the Rangers. So it's like, whoo, is that an emotion for Riley with a lot of different layers to it? All right, we'll take a commercial break. I think we got at least one more caller on the line. We'll hopefully hang on or get back with you. Let's take a commercial break, and we'll get to a couple other subjects next. 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to Footnotes. Kevin Foote, 103.7 The Game. Phone number 706-0111, 706-0111. Want to remind you one last time, we've been talking about this for several weeks, the Dad Doesn't Need Another Tie sweepstakes. The deadline to enter is at 10 a.m., which is in about 20-something minutes, about 21, 22 minutes away. So you got about 20 minutes. If you meant to sign up and you just kept putting it off, if you want a chance to win a $500 Visa gift card, that's no chump change gift now. That's no chump change prize to try to win. Brought to you by Cajun Gun and Gear. Dad Doesn't Need Another Tie sweepstakes. You could win a $500 Visa gift card. Deadline is in about 20 minutes. So go to 1037thegame.com and sign up now. All right. Speaking of basketball, I got a notification news deal here. It says Phoenix Sun All-NBA guard Chris Paul has entered the COVID-19 health and safety protocols and is sidelined for an indefinite period of time. Wow. Like, I hate that word indefinite because it really means nothing. It could mean he's going to be out the first minute of the game and play every other one, or it could mean, 10 years from now he's going to come back. Essentially, that's what it means. It means nothing. When you say someone's out indefinitely, that means we have no idea, and the words that I just spoke mean nothing. But So I hate that word indefinite because it doesn't really tell it. It sounds way more ominous than it actually is sometimes, is the point I'm making. But here, all I can think of is a guy who some people criticize because he's not, quote unquote, won the big one. And yet he's been a really good player. And he seems like he's finally in a position to maybe win the big one and be the leader of a team that does, maybe kind of sort of seems like he could be in that position. And if it gets ruined because of COVID, that would be awful. I mean, that would be awful for that guy. Look, I don't have any Chris Paul underoos or anything. You know, I'm no huge Chris Paul fan. But I don't have any reason to dislike him either. And so I'm like, man, you know, this guy needs a break. Like, this cannot happen. That is awful. So let's hope, you know, look, if you're a fan of a team that they're about to play, then I understand you don't want it to go well. I get that. But, man, no, that's awful. If he doesn't win on his own merit, then that's fine. But for him to miss out because let's hope that doesn't happen. So hopefully that gets taken care of, and that indefinite means like he's going to miss a practice, or two, you know. Let's hope what that means, because that'd be terrible for them to not win and him not be able to seize this opportunity that's in front of him. All right, do we have a caller still left? Let's go back to the phone lines. Hello.
Hey, before you know that, that previous caller before bitter. You see how much you prove to you prove that people like you. You already told you, huh?
What he said?
How much you like you and enjoy the show and everything.
Oh, no, man. No. He's a great call. He's been calling for years. I absolutely appreciate everything he said. Yes, sir.
I told you people like you, you see? I told you that. Not just on one side, you know, on the other airwaves. You was only like you on this side, too, man. You know?
And I appreciate everybody, it. Trust me.
Everybody knows sometimes you're off your rocker a little bit and everything. But, you know, that's okay.
Everybody's got to be a little crazy sometimes, you know? Ronnie. Everybody's got to be a little crazy sometimes. Like, so if you were the Nets, would you essentially tank game six?
Nope.
You don't believe in that?
Nope. The Knicks? That's going to come out and try to win, man. I mean, why wouldn't they wasn't trying to win this game and everything? The Bucks are psychologically frail, man. I mean, the Bucks always have it. They're something like Chris Paul like right now. They always have it in their position, in their pocket, right in their back pocket, and all of a sudden, let it slip away. I mean, the Rams going off of 50 last night, 49, shouldn't be no excuse for y'all losing the game. Y'all dominated the game. Y'all up 18 at halftime. Come on, now there's no need for none of that. And you crumble down the stretch like that, but that has to be some of the coaching, has to be mostly on the coach, because there's no way you can't say it's not really in the second half. One time you decide to double Kevin Durant, get the ball out of his hands, you just let him play one-on-one all night, thinking eventually he'll get cold. What kind of strategy is that? I mean, apparently he don't know who Kevin Durant is, because Kevin Durant had told him already. It told us as fans and as the public, look, viewers and listeners, it didn't tell us already. Y'all know who I am. I'm Kevin Durant. Y'all know who I am. So apparently Budenholzer don't know who he is and don't understand who he is and don't really know what a legit lethal scorer he is. So apparently he decided, well, he'll get cold eventually, so I'll just let him go here and battle with P.J. Tucker. Come on, man. Eventually he's going to eat P.J. Tucker alive. P.J. Tucker didn't play football the last game. That was cool. And everything. That was the 80s and 90s NBA. That was cool. But you know that wasn't going to happen again.
Well, yeah, but don't you think it might happen again in Milwaukee?
It might happen. But what that's telling you, the refs letting it go down like that. So the refs dictating how the series play out. But just let these guys play ball. I think Brooklyn will beat them in game six, man. Because like I said, Milwaukee is just a fragile team, man.
I don't know what they're doing
half the time. Their offense looked terrible most of the time. Last night they were attacking and stuff, getting downhill, doing what they're supposed to do to win the game. And then, when the time was starting doing what you're supposed to do to win the game, they totally went away from it. So I don't know what the hell they was doing. Like I said, they got to be – a lot of it is Giannis. but Budenholzer got to get a lot of this blame.
No, I agree, but Ronnie, here's the worst case scenario for the Nets. You really go 100% in Game Six, and you extend yourself when you're already fragile physically right now. You extend yourself. You put more minutes on Harden if he can even make it. I mean, they played him 40 some minutes last night. That seems a little crazy, anyway. But you really extend yourself and you lose. Therefore, you don't have as much energy and stamina left in Game Seven when you're holding more cards in Brooklyn, and you lose that one because you ran out of gas physically. That's the worst case scenario for the Nets to me.
I don't know, man. Like I said, they don't really have to go out and play and then go all out to beat the Bucks, man. You know, last night Harden didn't do anything and he still beat them. Harden had 5 points, 8 assists. He's basically a decoy last night, basically. You know, as long as he's out there on the floor, you know he's a threat to score or to hit the three on you, so you got to really pay attention to him and everything. So if I'm the player that's guarding him or the player that he's guarding, excuse me, if I'm that guy, I make him work. I'm going to keep attacking him to see how good the hamstring is. So Milwaukee played right into the head. They duped Milwaukee. That's what they did.
I agree, but Milwaukee's going to make adjustments. Milwaukee's going to make adjustments. They're not going to do the same thing.
Well, they better. They better because apparently, like I said, Budenholzer, apparently it takes him forever to figure out what's going on. So it takes you to the next game to realize, well, I got a double team coming, man. Coming your way. You should do it. I mean, come on, Cat.
That's what I'm saying. They're going to do that.
The whole half. You know? I mean, come on. I mean, that's sad.
I'm with you. I'm with you.
I'm going to hang up in this.
All right. Thanks, Ronnie. No, I understand. I just, and again, I hope the Bucks win. I'm not a Nets fan. I don't have any hatred for the Nets, but I don't really like the whole let's all get together kind of thing. And so I don't hate the Nets, but I'm certainly not pulling for them. I hope the Bucks win. But if I'm the Nets, man, I got to seriously. Like, I'm not saying don't try at all. I say just fire up a bunch of threes and just go for it. And if it works, great. I save myself. I don't have to go. And if it doesn't work, I'm going to have a lot more energy for and let perhaps less chance of, you know, just getting injured and having, I don't know. If they play another physically energy-sapping game and it goes down to the end and they lose, I think their chances of winning Game 7 at home go down other than, you know, so we'll see. That's why you have a coach. That's why you have a team. That's why there's strategy involved. I understand Ronnie's point that the Bucks are fragile and they are always kind of on the edge of, you know, that old word that we call choking or whatever however you want to describe it, not, you know, underachieving or whatever you want to say. I get Ronnie's point, but man, if I was a Nets fan, I'd be really worried about playing a physically demanding Game 6. I better win it if I do it. I better win it because, again, you're not 100%. You're not even close to 100% physically. And teams can get worn out in a 7-game series. So it's that's just a fascinating, one of the many fascinating aspects about this particular series. And we'll see how that plays out. All right, hear the music. Time to take a commercial break. We'll finish out the first hour next. 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to Footnotes. 103.7 The Game. Want to remind you, live music is coming back. The Les Bon Temps Roulet music TV show is returning to KDCG. The next live taping will take place on Thursday, June the 24th, at Pont Bros Cajun Restaurant featuring Troy Lejeune and Cajun Review. Show starts at 7. It's free. You can get more information at KDCG.com. You know, one of the things I believe is that you can really appreciate the great days if you remember the bad, you know, theories like that. And so I just cringed when I saw the result of the game in San Francisco last night. The Diamondbacks. And look, I don't care anything about the Diamondbacks, but I can still sympathize with the Diamondbacks are having a miserable season. And again, I remember as a Saints, lifelong Saints fan and Astro fan, I can remember some bad years. And fortunately, we haven't had too many of those just really bad years in this century. But it's been a, for the most part, it's been a great century for those of us who are Saints and Astro fans. But the Diamondbacks, I don't know exactly what it is. Seemed like over the weekend I saw they had lost 23 of their last 28. They have the worst record in baseball. They're having a miserable season. They were up 7-0 last night at San Francisco, and they lost. It was the worst loss. It was the biggest deficit that where a team had all year long so far that lost the game. I mean, when you're up 7-0, you should win the game. And they are so bad. They were up 7-0 and they lost. And they, you know, it's just, I mean, I don't know how many diehard Arizona Diamondback fans there are. I'm sure they have their fair share. But, man, I can't think about how miserable it would be to be a fan of a team going through that. When, I mean, those who stuck with it, you know, most fans are what I call microwave fans or whatever. You know, they are there sometimes. They're there when things go well, and then when things go bad, they kind of fade away. But for those fans who, like, you know, when the Astros were losing 100 games every 3 years in a row, I was sticking there and going through the pain and the agony, hoping for a better day and believing a better day was coming, and those better days came. And, but, you know, you have by far the worst, you have the worst record in baseball. You're, like, setting all-time historical records for road losses in a row, and you're up 7-0. And you're like, oh, finally, once we're going to be able to enjoy a great road win over a good team. And then you lose. Oh, it's just, I didn't lose any sleep over it, but I was like, man. Man, it really helps you appreciate when your team is so much better than a team that's going through that kind. Man, what an awful, miserable situation the Arizona Diamondbacks are, right? And I didn't think they were going to be this bad. I mean, you can't hardly ever think anybody's going to be this bad. You know how hard it is to lose like 20 road games in a row? You know how hard that is to do? Man, that's a lot of bad baseball. Anyway, helps me appreciate being an Astro fan, seeing that. We'll take a commercial break. That's it for the first hour. Another hour to follow. 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to Footnotes. Kevin Foote on 103.7 The Game, broadcasting from the First South Farm Credit Studio, simulcast on Stadium 32.3 and 133 on LUS. Big news since we last spoke about 10 minutes or so ago. We have learned that the Pelicans have fired head coach Stan Van Gundy. Now, there's so many layers to an announcement like that and in a situation like that. I have so many questions / comments. One of them is Stan Van Gundy is who he is. You knew who Stan Van Gundy was, what his style was, how he handled people before you hired him. Obviously, it didn't work. He didn't get along with the players. But again, you knew the kind of the makeup of your team before you hired him. If you didn't want a guy who was had a lot more of the "I'm old school and it's my way or the highway" to him, which understandably doesn't necessarily work in this era. I get it. Why'd you hire him? Like, did he get a fair shot shake? Of course he didn't get. Even if you hate Van Gundy, to say he got a fair shake is not accurate. It's just not accurate. Now, you might say it was a terrible hire to begin with. Hard to argue with that point. But You knew what he was. Just like I always say, Tuck Tail. He knew what the NFL was. If he wasn't a good enough coach, why did he go? What an awful decision. He had been in the NFL. He knew the difference between the NFL and college football. He knew he wasn't guaranteed to have the best players. So everybody think he was the greatest coach ever. That doesn't happen in the NFL. You actually have to out-coach people who may have more talent than you. So he knew what it was. That's why I think that's just such an awful decision. Like, if you don't want a coach like that, don't hire one. He has a pretty young team, a lot of new pieces coming together, did not have a good offseason. You know, to say he got a fair shake would just be totally wrong in my opinion. But again, I understand it's kind of they didn't like his style of coach. I get it. There's not a lot of coaches like that anymore, especially in the NBA. Especially in the NBA. It's a player's era. It just is. And, you know, the other sports are fighting some of that, too. You know, people talk about Aaron Rodgers every day and Russell Wilson and all these guys. And you gotta listen to the players more. It's just the way it is in this era. I mean, you don't have to like it. You don't even have to participate in it. You might pay a price if you don't participate in it, but you don't have to. But don't. If you don't want that, don't hire that kind of a coach. So, you know, we'll see who they get. I would think they would be getting someone younger and, you know, not more like a Steve Nash kind of guy. In my opinion, it'd be great if they could find more of a happy medium. But again, it obviously didn't work. He didn't get along with the players. They didn't communicate well. Were there a lot of bad things that happened? Certainly there were. But again, overall, you know, there wasn't time to say, well, he got a fair shake. They should have known that wasn't the kind of coach they wanted, if that's not the kind of coach they wanted. So we'll see who they choose next. But no, I guess you could say it's shocking, but you can't argue that it was working. It's just you could argue, well, they didn't have enough time to know if it was going to work long term. Now, I'll give the Pelicans some credit in this. Like, don't, you know, if you don't think it's going to work, don't kick the can too far. Pull the Band-Aid off and let's move forward. And that's basically what they did. You know, a lot of times a team will get a free agent or they'll get make some decision. And instead of, you know, draft a guy in the first round and you start playing him, and instead of just saying, okay, we made a mistake and moving on, they prolong it and just more agony and more agony. So I can certainly get the value of, yeah, okay, we made a mistake, own it up to the mistake, and moving forward. So we'll see if this makes any difference come next year, and I think it'll be very telling the kind of coach that they hire to replace him. Let's go to the phone lines. Hello.
Morning, Foot.
Good morning, sir.
Hey, Foot. Now, I'm on the Stan Van Gundy. I told you in losing everybody that was the wrong hire. And I gave him 1 year with that team, and he had his 1 year. He was the wrong guy for the job. I told y'all that.
Yeah, it looks pretty obvious that was the case. Yes, sir.
Now, with this Bucks and Nets thing, Foot, I'll say that from listening to you and Ron, you don't have the Nets don't have to do really anything spectacular to beat the Bucks, because the Bucks always beat themselves. So, but I think they need to do what they have to do to close this game out, because they're unhealthy and these Bucks can easily come back and take this series. But like Charles Barkley said, they're a dumb team. How you don't attack the mismatches. And I look at James Harden. James Harden can't play defense because of that injury like he wants to. You run a pick and roll on that guy, especially with that injury side, he can't pick you up fast. They did it a few times, and it worked. You take your fastest guy, and he can't catch him. It's going
right,
to
but again, I think sometimes we forget.
For you. How you going to attack the weakness?
I agree, but I think we forget sometimes the ebb and flows of a seven-game series. What they did was stupid, but they're not going to duplicate that. It's going to change. So
they've been playing stupid this whole series. Last year they played stupid. They just played stupid, but it ain't changed. That part ain't changed yet.
Oh, no, they will have a different strategy. Game six, I'm not saying that for sure the Bucks are going to win. I'm saying game six will not be like game five. It will be a different game.
I'm hoping these Bucks take this game. I don't like cupcake. I'm not a Brooklyn Nets fan anyway, so I don't want them to win. You know, I'm no Bucks fan. I just don't know Kevin Durant fan. Now, Foot, I see you having a glorious morning. Your team pulled it out. I didn't check the box scores this morning, so listening to one of the fans, callers, yep, the Yankees pulled the game out. That sounds good. So, what you think? You think your Astros got a good shot coming up on the next team?
On the White Sox?
Yep.
Well, I mean, I think they got as good a shot as anybody. I mean, for one, they can kind of match the starting pitching, which most teams can't do with the White Sox because their starting pitching is outstanding. Mm. The Astros tend to play better against the better teams. And so I like their chances. You know, I'll take two. Look, if they go 2-2 with the White Sox, I'll be good with that. Anything better than that, I'll be dancing.
I can dig it. Last but not least, but you told Ron it's good to be crazy sometimes. I just want to let you know you're crazy all the time. Have a good one, bro.
Take care. Well, I don't know if I said it. I don't remember saying it was good. It's you know, you everybody can be a little crazy sometimes. I mean, like I say, I give everybody one team that they can be completely irrational in their hatred towards and in their reasoning. Everybody gets a team, and it's okay. You can be a completely irrational of that team, and I'm not going to call you out for it. So that's part of being a fan. That's fun. That's the fun part. Now, again, like I've said, the caveat that completion irrationally. What I mean by that is not, you know, physical violence, like this idea of, you know, you're going to physically try to harm someone because they're a fan of another team. That's just insanity. I mean, that's just stupid. But I'm not talking about that. I'm not talking about brawling in the stands or jumping someone in the parking lot on their way to the game because they root for the other team. That's stupid. And, you know, those guys need to go to jail. But I'm talking about just banter back and forth, friendly, I don't like your team, so I'm going to make fun of them when they lose, banter like we do and laugh and joke and realize that while it's very important to us, it's not worth going to jail for. I'm not talking about that kind of irrational behavior, but I'm just talking about teams behavior, banter. That's fun. No, his Yankees did win last night, so that was a good win. So we'll see. Again, it's part the Stan Van Gundy thing is part of this major thing that's going on in sports, and it's more in the NBA because the NBA was already more of a players' league than the other ones were, than baseball and football are, but it's happening even in those sports. You know, individual players, their voices matter more now than they did. And look, for the first, like in baseball, for the first 100 years, the players' voices meant nothing. And then in the 70s, it's, you know, the last 30 or 40 years, their voices started to turn a little bit in the 70s. And now that they have more of a voice and they have more free agency, and I think their voices are not to the level of what the NBA is. And even in college now, we've seen it happen in recent years that the players' voices matter more. So if you want to be part of that, then don't hire an old school coach. It just seems real easy to me. That's not a complicated issue. So we'll see what the Pelicans can do in the next with this next hire, and hopefully, I'm not a lifelong. I mean, I'm not a Pelicans fan because the Pelicans. I was already old and set in my ways way before the Pelicans got here. But I root for. I mean, they're in the state. I hope they do well. I know, you know, guys like Lewis who are younger and who are big fans of them. I wish them well. So I hope they make a good hire. I hope it works. I'll pull for them. I'm just not going to live and die with them like I do Saints and Astros. That's not going to happen ever. But hopefully they can make a good hire. We'll see how that goes. All right, we'll take a commercial break. Again, we'll have a little shorter segment this time because we'll be talking with Chandler Rome of the Houston Chronicle about the Astros, get his latest feelings, bounce some ideas off of him at the bottom of the hour. We'll take a commercial break and be back. 103.7 The Game. Welcome back. Footnotes, Kevin Foote, 103.7 The Game. Phone number 706-0111. If you would like to get in, this is the last segment to be able to do so. If you have any thoughts on the Pelicans or any of the baseball issues, we talked a lot of NBA in the first hour, trying to figure out what's the best strategy for the Nets moving forward to game six. Again, don't get caught up in, well, this just happened, that's the way it is. I mean, things change. A seven-game series can be like a book where every chapter can be completely different. And that's and it's about, are you managing to win the next game? Are you managing to win the series? It's just so many ways to play this. So it's going to be very interesting to see how they do. So, again, we have this segment, to phone calls. After that, we'll be doing our only interview of the day. Before we get to more comments about what kind of a big major theme of today's show, I want to remind you to go to the website, 103.7 The Game, join the Clubhouse Rewards. You might win one of two gift certificates to Cypress Bayou, which could be a $150 gift certificate to Mr. Lester's Steakhouse or a $25 gift certificate to Mabel's Kitchen, both at Cypress Bayou, but you can't win if you don't join, so go to 1037thegame.com and join today. All right, part of this whole players theme that we were just talking about having to do with the Pelicans and the firing of an old-school coach, kind of a little bit more of a me or the highway kind of coach in Stan Van Gundy, is the conference, the college level, the conference rules. SEC did it. Now the Sun Belt's done it where you can transfer. There's a lot more flexibility to transfer. And, I mean, it's just too much chaos for my little mind to comprehend, I think. Like, I'm wondering how far away are we? And this may sound crazy, but, like, how far, if we keep going down this road, are we literally going to see this scenario come to play where in the first half of a football game, a player is going to have a bad game or disagree with his coach or get in an argument or whatever, and then by the second half of the game, he's going to be playing for the other team? Like, how long is it going to take before we get to that point where forget about games or seasons or immediate eligibility where you're going to play one game in the first half with one team and then in the second half you're going to be playing for the other team? I do remember, I don't remember the exact player, but it's happened in Major League Baseball before. Seemed like it was happened where there was a doubleheader and you got traded. And you were on one team in the first game, and then, you know, you were on the other team in the second game of the doubleheader. I don't know. I can't remember the player, but it seemed like something very similar to that happened once around the right around the trade deadline in July in Major League Baseball. But, I mean, it's just, Is there an end to this? It's crazy. But again, that's the era we're in. And, you know, it's just, it's total free agency. College sports now. You just go. I wonder, you know, and it's basically that way in high school sports. Like, people transfer like crazy. Used to be. And the LHSA got really mad at me. Was it last summer? Because I said in a comment about this. But it's real. It's true. Like, it used to be you could not transfer. And it still is supposed to be that way on the books, to my knowledge. You can't transfer for athletic reasons. If you do, you're cheating. And they kind of, you know, the LHSA is kind of like at the point now where the player, the ability to go wherever you want is kind of there now, where it wasn't for years. It's the same way in all, it's just each level has its own examples, but that's basically it, where the players, or in the high school case, the families, decide what they're going to do. The rules, the old school rules for decades don't matter. If I want to go, I'll go. At some point, there's got to be a sliding scale where you got to have some control of your program. Like, you got to be able to set rules and make people stick to them. And I guess what coaches would say or think, I guess, along this line is, if I set the rules and the players don't want to abide by them, then, as Coach Napier has said many times, some attrition is good attrition. And so, that doesn't always mean talent. Sometimes that has to do with chemistry of a ball club. So you got to have rules, but man, it's going to get tougher, especially at the college level. Tougher and tougher and tougher to be a high school coach or a college coach and set rules, because all they got to do is say, I don't like your rule. I'm transferring. I'm out of here. And they can just do it. Man, that's tough. Got to be getting tougher and tougher. Be a high school coach or a college coach. And for years and years, people didn't like pro sports because of free agency. Well, now it's a lot tougher to move at the pro level than it is the high school and the college level. A lot tougher. It's, I don't know. It's getting to be a tricky deal. That's all I'm saying. Tricky, tricky deal. So I don't know where the end is. And again, you might say, well, that's the way it should be. Okay. As long as my Saints and Astros win, I don't really care that much, but I kind of see a lot of potential trouble with this trend is all I'm saying. Let's take one more call before we get to our break and get to Chandler. Hello, you're on the air.
Hey, Kevin, how's it going this morning?
Hello, sir.
I'm going to play devil's advocate with you. Is it fair if a coach can just up and leave, or anyone on the staff can just up and leave, because they've been doing that for centuries?
That's
where
true.
They may get a better opportunity. So it's all about opportunity. So if we can't crucify the coaches and the staff and the position coach and this, that, and the other, why crucify the 18-year-old or 19-year-old?
Well, I think many of us do. And crucify, I know you're just using that word to illustrate your point. But a lot of us do heavily criticize the act. I was just doing it to Tugtail earlier in the show. And so your point, though, is a good one, that players, that coaches make statements all the time, and then they're out of there. Your point is well made. Yeah.
An example, LSU had a fantastic season with Burrow. The coaches ran off. They had another opportunity. In my opinion, as an LSU fan, a diehard, I was heartbroken. I was completely heartbroken. why would they go, you know, and leave the chemistry that we've built? We had an opportunity. The same with Nick Saban. We had an opportunity to do great things here in Louisiana, and they run off. And you know what? They didn't get the little coordinators and stuff, that season. They didn't get nobody chewing them down. And with that being said, Kev, and you probably played sports. Like, I played sports my whole life. There's a lot of times, as a kid playing sports, college, high school, even professional, some coach just may not like you. So, for instance, you may be balling your butt off, but the position coach, for some reason, y'all don't see eye to eye. Or even the head coach, the position coach, is pushing for you to get in the game, but the head coach has a problem with it. In those cases, this happens across America every year where there's someone potentially stopping you from shining or potentially stopping you from playing ball. Like, that's why I kind of sided with the Sooners to be able to let them go and have a choice of if they're going to leave or not, because there's a lot of things that go on at the university that we don't really pay attention to. There's some real serious things, and I know this personally. My brother played at LSU. The coach was best, and the DB coach and all of that, the defensive coordinator left.
Absolutely. I think you're absolutely correct. I appreciate the call very much. I know that definitely happens. His points were very, very well made. That is definitely the other side of the story. I just wonder if there's a sliding scale there that could get tricky at times. All right, we'll take a commercial break. We'll come back. Let's talk to Chandler Rome, the Houston Chronicle, on the other side. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Footnotes. Kevin Foote on 103.7 The Game. Want to remind you tonight, game two of this two-game series between the Astros and the Rangers. That was just a hair away from being even at 4-4 until Correa and Altuve hit some late-game homers last night. Game two can be heard right here. Astro launch slip begins at 6:35, first pitch at 7:10. Astros Rangers tonight right here at 103.7 The Game. Very interesting game last night. I'm sure Chandler, I know what it's like when you're trying to write and then the game changes dramatically at the very end. It was exciting finish. How are you, Chandler?
I was not actually working last night. So it was great to not be at the ballpark for that. I'll be honest with you. You understand the pain. The worst thing that can happen is a walk for in our business is a walk off home run or anything like that.
Yes.
So it was nice to be off for the night.
So do you ever get to, have you partake, we were joking last hour about Dollar Dog Day. I've never actually attended a Dollar Dog Day, and I like to eat, so I think I might hurt myself. Have you ever partaken in Dollar Dog Night?
I have not. I don't mind a good hot dog. Now, don't get me wrong. If I could, I would. That's not something I've done since I've been here. I may have to change that. Maybe it can be a story. See how many I can eat before the seventh or eighth inning when they stop selling them.
Yeah, that's a good idea. All right, lots of things to get to. One of them is Lance McCullers. Lance McCullers has been fascinating with me ever since he joined the Astros. I've always had the thought in the back of my mind that he would actually be much better as a relief pitcher, even a closer, than a starter. He goes through stretches where he looks great, and then he has these stretches where he can't seem to throw a strike. And he's coming back off the IL now into a staff that essentially has seven capable starting pitchers. A lot of people think he's like the second or third best starter on this staff. I don't see it that way. Where does he fit in long term, do you think, under the current situation?
Oh, he's a starter. I mean, the extension he got this offseason and just the repertoire he has, I can understand where the bullpen kind of questions or where that comes from. You know, the stuff would play up out of the bullpen. He did it in 2018 when he was pitching through a torn UCL. But, I mean, this guy's a starter. He just is. He's developed a cutter and the slider that are two-plus pitches for him, and it gives him a four-pitch mix. I think the thing you're seeing with him now is that, you know, he barely throws the curveball anymore because his other pitches have played so well and he's developed them so well. I wasn't on the post-game Zoom last night, so I'm not sure if he was asked, but last night his velocity was pretty down all night on all of his pitches. I don't know if that – I mean, obviously he got good results, and they didn't pull him early, so I don't know if he was hurt or not. But it's interesting to see his velocity. I think his two-seam velocity was only about 91 when he's usually 93, 94. So that's maybe something to keep an eye on. I think I read somewhere that he had a finger thing in the bullpen that he didn't want to throw his breaking ball because of it. But, you know, with him, it's always going to be about health, and it's always going to be about staying on the field. Obviously, he had Tommy John in 2019, but I mean, there's a reason they gave him the extension they gave him in the offseason, and that's because they think he can be a top of the rotation type starting pitcher. And I think that's what he is going forward. I guess I get the allure of putting him in the bullpen, but I just don't think that's realistic.
Right. No, I don't think they're going to do it. I also don't know if he can ever stay healthy enough to be a consistent starting pitcher, which is one of the main things. But right now, though, as he currently is with the seven potential starters, you trust him more than four or five of those guys?
I mean, trust is a relative term. You know, Luis Garcia, we saw in his last start kind of the fickleness of being a rookie starter. I mean, he was really, really good through that stretch, and then he had a bad start last time out. You trust the experience, and you trust the guy that's been there, and you trust the guy that knows himself and can work through. This is unsustainable what the Astros have right now. I mean, and this is not trying to like forecast an injury or anything, but teams don't just run out seven healthy starting pitchers, you know, throughout the season. There's going to be something that happens. Either someone becomes very ineffective, someone gets hurt. James Click says this all the time. You know, you can go to bed with seven healthy starters, and then in the course of overnight, you could wake up and have three. I mean, that's just kind of the volatility of starting pitching and the volatility of baseball in general. So right now, it's a good problem to have. Let's see how they look in July and August when, you know, the season has taken its toll. They do have to monitor innings on Luis Garcia, and I assume we're including Christian Javier in that starting question,
yes,
too.
Yes.
I mean, they've got to monitor his innings, too. And I think, especially in this stretch of 20 games, and especially with how awful their bullpen's been, they're going to have to make a decision here on Christian Javier. Like, they can't afford to just keep using him once every 4 or 5 days. They're going to have to – and again, I don't think this is like an indictment on him or his future with the team, so I think he's a starting pitcher. But I think they're going to have to start using him as a traditional reliever, especially in this 20-game stretch where the bullpen is going to be tested and they're going to go to a six-man rotation. I think you're soon going to see Christian Javier deploy as more of a high-leverage reliever traditionally. And Luis Garcia is going to go to the bullpen after this 20-game stretch, I think, just to conserve his innings. So you're kind of solving it in and of itself there with Javier and Garcia.
Odorizzi pitched last night out of the bullpen for the first time in 8 years, and they kind of used him like you had just alluded to how they've used Javier, which I think can be very effective here and there. I just don't know how sustainable that is in the regular season. And I know Odorizzi start next week. Do you see him being kind of flipped back and forth there?
No, I think they're going to keep him in the rotation until he just absolutely pitches his way out of it. I wasn't going to judge him last night either way, one way or the other, if he had gone out there and given up 8 runs or if he would have gone out there and did what he did, retired 12 of the 14, because it was just so foreign to him. You mentioned he hadn't been in the bullpen in 8 years. I mean, when you're asking someone to do something so foreign, especially an established guy like that, a guy that's got his pre-start routine that's kind of been establishing himself in the big leagues. I mean, that's a difficult thing to judge anyone off of, but I guess it's, you know, it's good for the Astros that he came in and pitched as well as he did, but he's in the rotation. I mean, he's going to start on Monday against the Orioles, who are awful. So you would think that would give him a soft landing spot to go in there and kind of reestablish himself, and maybe that this outing was a step toward that. But I mean, I say he's staying in the rotation, but that doesn't, you know, excuse the fact he's got to pitch better. I mean, I think his ERA is north of five. He's got to pitch better. And he's had an inconsistent start to his season with the injury, with reporting late because of signing late. But, I mean, those excuses are kind of falling on deaf ears. He's going to have to start producing and pitching better. And, you know, if he doesn't pitch better, if he can't get deep into games and if it becomes that situation, then you could maybe start talking about putting him in the bullpen. But I don't think that's realistic right now.
Okay, come August, right past the trade deadline, when they get to the beginning of August, how realistic is it that Baez is going to be pitching, and maybe even the mystery man, Austin Pruitt, who they traded for and never has thrown a pitch for the Astros? Is it too early to even have an idea of the timetable on those guys?
Well, I mean, I'd love to know, but the Astros just choose not to communicate anything about their injured players. Like, Austin Pruitt started a rehab assignment last night, and none of us knew about it. The minor league team just kind of tweeted out its pitching line as if it was nothing. And, you know, you ask anyone in the Astros organization about Pedro Baez, and they have no idea. I mean, Dusty Baker doesn't know. James Click doesn't want to put a timetable on anything, which would lead me to believe that, you know, I would be shocked if Pedro Baez throws a pitch for this team before the All-Star break. Austin Pruitt being on a rehab assignment is certainly a step in the right direction. But, I mean, we don't know how many he'll need. We don't know where he's at. He only threw an inning last night. He only threw 14 pitches. So that's just kind of like he's starting at the bottom.
Yeah.
And, you know, Josh James isn't even on a rehab assignment yet. I don't even know if Pedro Baez is throwing off a mound yet. I'll probably ask these questions in the next 2 days and get no response because that's kind of how the Astros operate. But I don't know. And it's kind of weird that all we hear all the time when we ask Dusty Baker or James Click or anyone about, you know, what can you do to fix this bullpen? What can you do? And they always come back with Pedro Baez and Austin Pruitt and Josh James, and then they just don't want to update us on anything that they're doing. So it's kind of weird. But look, I mean, I don't think Pedro Baez is the bullpen savior. I don't think Josh James is the bullpen savior. I don't think Austin Pruitt's the bullpen savior. I don't think any combination of those three are the bullpen savior. I think this is a flawed bullpen that is not constructed very well. I don't think getting them back is going to magically make it any better. But I do think, you know, when you get into the playoffs, assuming they get to the playoffs, you can mask a lot of your bullpen deficiencies by putting starters in there and, you know, deploying Christian Javier and Luis Garcia as more kind of leverage sort of relievers would help. But no, I mean, to answer your question, no, I don't think Pedro Baez or Josh James is going to come back and magically make this bullpen good.
We're speaking with Chandler Rome of the Houston Chronicle. All right, we just have a few minutes left, and I just want to know how you have done this early on, and even, you know, I guess in college some before when you followed LSU, but right now, when you see a hitter go through a slump, you know, I have a lot of Astro fan friends, and they start to panic about this hitter or that hitter. You know that guys are going to have slumps and go through some of them for weeks at a time, a slump. Are there one or two statistics you look at to where, okay, this guy's 2-for-24 or whatever the slump is. Am I really worried about him long term, or is it more about the track record of that player, whether you're worried about there's something to be concerned about with a slump?
Well, I think track record goes into it, and I think one of the statistics I look at, first of all, you look at strikeout-to-walk ratio. Like, if he's striking out a bunch and not walking, that would tend to tell me he's pressing a little bit. That would tend to tell me he's chasing outside the strike zone. You look at his chase rate. You look at how much he's swinging. Like, is he being so aggressive that he's swinging at the first or second pitch of a plate appearance and just, you know, not making great contact? You look at the contact rate, too. Like, is he putting the ball in play, or is he swinging and missing? And then you look at the quality of contact. Is he hitting the ball hard, like with a high exit velocity, or is he hitting, you know, kind of weak contact? So, I mean, there's a lot of underlying stuff you can look into. You know, not every 2-for-20-something is created equal. I remember when Bregman was off to kind of a rougher start earlier this year, and the Astros kept saying, you know, he's He's been on base 25 straight games, which is great, but he was also like 6 for his last 40-something. Like, I mean, you can spin it any way you want. But you know, I think certainly with this team, slumps are kind of decreased because of kind of the elite lineup they have. Like, they can afford to have Bregman in a slump right now because everyone else is playing well, and that kind of vacillates over the year. Like, there will be some times where Altuve's in a slump, but if Brantley's hitting well and Correa's hitting well and Bregman's hitting well, no one really notices. So that's kind of the luxury the Astros have of having such an elite long lineup, is that these guys can go through slumps, and A, it doesn't really get noticed, and B, they're able to work through it without thinking, you know, they have to come back and carry the team.
So are you worried about Bregman? And I'm not talking about being a functional player in the lineup, about having the kind of power that he normally has for the rest of the season. You think that's going to come back or no?
I mean, I've covered Bregman since he was a freshman at LSU, and nothing ever kind of surprises me with him. He's about as in tune with his swing and his body and his mechanics as any ball player I know. He knows exactly what's wrong, and he can tell you exactly what's wrong with his swing, and he's pretty self-critical about when he's in a slump. You know, the power numbers have been interesting. It's certainly been something that I didn't expect. You know, I didn't expect him to hit 50 home runs this year, but I certainly expected him to have more than he has right now. I mean, I think he only has 7 home runs right now. He's only slugging 430, which is downright, you know, that's well below his average. So, my thing with Bregman is he always knows what he has to do. He always knows what he's doing wrong. When he's hitting home runs, he's pulling the ball. I mean, this is not, again, when you talk about Bregman as a power hitter, this is not a guy that's hitting 450-foot bombs. He's pulling the ball into the Crawford boxes. He's using the ballpark to his advantage. He knows exactly where he needs to hit the ball and the kind of the contact rate he needs. So I'm not worried about him yet, just because, like I said, the Astros lineup is so good. Like, he can kind of work out of this, but it certainly has been suspicious that, you know, he hasn't had the power. He's not staying behind the ball. He's not driving the ball as much. And if anybody's going to turn it around, it's him, because, like I said, he's so in tune with his mechanics and he knows exactly what's wrong every time. It's just sort of putting that into play and putting that into action.
I appreciate your time very much, sir. We'll see what happens. We mentioned it last week. After the White Sox this weekend, they play a lot of teams with a lot of bad records. So we'll see if they can seize the day on that.
Yep, that's going to be a lot of bad baseball. I can't wait to watch it.
Thank you, Chandler, very much. All Have right. a nice day.
All right, thanks.
Chandler Rome of the Houston Chronicle. Well, see, I don't care about bad baseball. He's a reporter. Objective. I'm a fan. So if the Astros win, it's good baseball for me. At least that's the way I look at it. We'll finish out the show next, 103.7 The Game. Jim. Welcome back to Footnotes. Kevin Foote on 103.7 The Game. Interesting conversation are things with Chandler Rome. And he seems, I don't know. I don't know that he was overly comforting about my power. And I don't need Bregman to be a major power hitter. It's just, if they're going to continue to hit him in the three hole, he's got to be able to drive in runs when you're hitting in the three hole. And I don't need a bunch of homers. But I don't need a weak ground ball to short either. I mean, most of the time, you have to be able to drive the ball. I just wonder if he continues to not drive it, are they going to maybe try him to move out? A lot of times, moving to the two-hole can help a lot of hitters. Or maybe they need to be putting Yulier, guys who can drive it a little more in that spot. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Appreciate Chandler coming on and the phone calls today. Y'all have a nice one.